Thank you for listening to Abstract Illusions Radio. With each breath of air, gain new insights and inspirations as we explore and expose the different aspects of the human experience. Now with your host, Jennifer Hellman.
They sweep across warm hills and fields. Wisps of conversation among angels, hushes and winks tucked within oaks and corn stalks, then flowing into green hollows, tender as the reflected light in a raccoon's eye when she's nesting her young in a den of limbs, leaves, and shadows. So soft their texture, so thin their size, baby's skin given form not by the heavens, but by sun-warmed land whose breath has been taken away by the sudden onset of cold, crystallized nights. A sacrificial path to beauty, nature's way. It's not the path that takes my breath away when I walk through these fields, adorned as they are in the thin, white cloaks that turn translucent at first sunlight. Rather, it's the conversation of angels within songs of birds as they decide which halos to fly through.
Good evening, everyone. This is Jennifer Hellman, and that is our guest, Bob Yearling, tonight, who is a writer, a poet, the editor of the Hummingbird Review. It is a great pleasure and an honor to have him on again. That was a beautiful poem. What was the name of that, Bob?
That was Field of Halos.
It was beautiful. And your website is wordjourneys.com.
That's right.
It really is a great time for poetry. It really is having almost like a new awakening in many ways, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. And what's fun for me about poetry is I'm an editor and I'm a writer and I work with a lot of clients and so forth, but it's the chance to just kind of let the soul be free and to write what it feels and what comes through. And a lot of my poetry combines spiritual images, nature, love, things like that. And I write with a lot of imagery. And what's interesting about the word image, I think that a lot of people might not realize, is that image comes from, is actually an ancient Syriac word, which predates Syria. And the word actually means both icon and angel in ancient Syriac. So it's image in that ancient language is literally considered a messenger moving between the physical and the divine. So that's kind of how I see poetry, and it's always fun to write it and to participate with it.
But it definitely has been a great avenue for me in many ways. In fact, that's actually one way I actually met you, was showing you my book of poems that I had done in one of your writing classes. The muse and the imagination, the flavors of the experience is something that I always kind of get down on paper. And it's kind of really a capturing of the essence of the soul in that moment for me. So with poetry and with writing and all the expression that's going on right now, let's go over really briefly that there's certainly got to be some, I don't want to say a process, but a way of emphasizing that people are letting people know a good way of the healing aspect of it by just being in that moment and just letting it out without really being held up by anything, really. Don't you feel that a lot of people are a little nervous about writing poetry or even writing because of what are people going to think? And it really is just putting a pencil to paper and writing.
Yeah, I think that's... I think with a lot of people, one of the problems with writing is that when they were in school, they were told that either, they weren't spelling words correctly, or they weren't structuring sentences properly, or their stories didn't have any imagination or something like that. So they were given a lot of negative feedback from teachers and so forth. And so that's one of the inhibitions or obstacles. And I think the other one is, like you mentioned a minute ago, that we have a tendency to be worried about what other people think. I think the way around that is to journal, to keep journals and keep them very private unto oneself. Because the thing about writing that's really wonderful, and you know this being a writer yourself, is that we do get to cut loose and be completely uninhibited and intimate and free, and it's like a kid playing in a sandbox when we're able to just let go of others' expectations and what people think and so forth, and just go inside ourselves and write. I just think, and that in itself is the healing process. When we can, if we have something that's, you know, either, you know, just something that's caused some sort of trauma in our life, and we're able to go inside and just write our way out, it just releases that energy, that dark energy or negative energy or negative thought or whatever that we're holding back. But again, it's a matter of giving ourselves permission to do this and not worry about what people think or what they expect, because that's not what pure writing is about at all.
Yeah, I have to admit, growing up, I have dealt with having dyslexia. So writing, reading, it's always been a challenge for me. Though I've been very lucky with a lot of supportive teachers, especially even in college. My first writing teacher, I actually flunked my English, my basic English class in college because of leaving five endings off of words in the final essay, but because of my dyslexia at the time, they actually waived it because everything else was fine. I just left a few D's off and I-N-G's and S's and a few things here and there, but over the structure and the content was good. But I count my blessings because I had a really supportive teacher. She was a new teacher and she saw promise with me. And I always find if somebody tells me I can't do something, and this is me, I take it on as a challenge. Okay, let me see how I can improve that. But then again, my parents were very much, you got to do better than that. So I was always kind of pressured in that way as well. But writing to me has always been a way of really getting answers through my writing. Automatic writing has always been a big part of my writing. It's how I got in touch with my soul, my higher self. So to me, it's a good way of just doing, even if you do mindless reading, and, you know, I tell my clients, write down a question that you want to answer and just write down anything that comes to your head. Just keep writing. No matter what, if it makes no sense to you, just keep writing. And you'll keep going and you'll be amazed later what you've written. If you just get in that zone and just whatever pops in your head, write it down. And I've written many poems that way as well.
Yeah, and that's also how good fiction is written. Where often, I know when I'm writing fiction or short fiction, it usually takes an hour or two to really get in there, to get warmed up, get in the characters, and so forth. But once inside, you know, once writing from within the characters and writing the story, it, you know, time goes by. Don't notice the amount of time. I mean, just space and time just seems to be suspended, and it's just that pure creative process, or what the late writer John Gardner called the creative dream, and it's that's what we're all, you know, that's what we're all seeking, because that's just pure play at that point, and it's also where healing takes place, where we feel the most joy, where we feel closest to spirit, closest to God. And so if we're doing that, whether it's poetry or writing fiction or writing music or whatever, that's, you know, we're not only writing really at our best, but we're just really connected in such a way that, the communication level is just really high for ourselves and also for whoever might read it.
Mm-hmm. It really is a great way to just really even investigate the characters by just getting in the zone, because you never know what's going to pop up in just becoming the characters. And I've done poetry actually with someone where I became a character and they were another character, and we write back and forth, but in prose and in poetry. We created a story just out of the blue, and we just wrote back and forth as almost like an exercise of creating characters and being and feeling how that character would be. And it's, I've done that with a few different writers, and it's been a great exercise and a lot of fun.
Yeah, and one of the, and that's a really good point, because one of the things that a lot of writers I've worked with and whose books I've edited and I've coached and so forth, when they might have a, they have a good story structure, they've got it outlined, they've got all their notes together and so forth, but the mistake that is often made is to stay so tight to that outline, so tight to whatever that plan is, that they don't allow the character or the story to reveal itself. And so one of the things I like to talk about when people are writing first drafts, whether it's a poem or a song or a short story or an essay or a novel, mm-hmm. or whatever, is the whole purpose of a first draft is to get everything down. That's the only purpose. There's no place in a first draft for editing. And what you want to do, what the writers want to do is just write out and go with, in whatever tangent you're taking, because you never know when the really good stuff, the nectar or the ambrosia, as it were, of your story is going to come out. And it usually comes out by surprise, and mm-hmm. and it just comes out from behind the corner without, you know, us even knowing ahead of time. We just run into it and it's like, whoa, there it is. And so it's really important to be able to have that sense of trust and that sense of freedom inside, to be able to just let the story reveal itself, where we're simply serving the story by writing it down, rather than us trying to, you know, figure out strategically every little nook and cranny of our story or our poem.
Right. If you don't mind, I'm going to read one of my poems that kind of illustrates being in that moment and just seeing what comes out. This actually is more of a channeled poem than anything else, if you wouldn't mind, Bob.
Yeah, go. I'd like to hear it.
It's called Stars of the Soul. Touch the stars, child, not in the night sky, but the stars that live within your heart and soul. Each bring a piece of your true essence, alive and free, that innate dance that you love so much. Each star is a dream, a breath, a breeze in the wind. Let your soul be free and live the dream. Move your mind out of the way. Embrace the stars shining within you. Breathe in your lungs and exhale your potential. The wind will carry your dreams to the universe. Live the dance, child. You are the star that shines brightly in the night sky, in your heart, in your soul dance. Be that star, child, within the galaxy of your heart.
That's
just
really beautiful.
Thank you. And it literally just flows out of me, and I sometimes go, wow, where'd that come from?
It's just the whole process of creating, you know, and that's what we're doing. We're in the process of creation when we're first writing the poems or stories or whatever. But it's so intoxicating, and I think it's why we keep coming back for more, even more than being published. Like, it reminds me of John Keats, the great English poet, the Romantic poet, who unfortunately didn't live very long. He wrote he wrote Ode to a Nightingale and several other great poems. Well, Keats was so much more wrapped up in the process of creating than in the results of what he created, was that he would often leave his poems, he'd just leave them laying around, and he would just walk away and didn't care about them anymore once they were created. And so the only reason why we have Keats's work still with us today is because people who recognized his talent would kind of go in behind him and pick these things up. Otherwise, we probably would have very few poems of his. We certainly wouldn't have Ode to a Nightingale because he wrote it on a napkin in a tavern and then walked out of the tavern. So it was all about the process for him, to the point where creating was everything and what he created didn't matter.
Mm-hmm. So he really had no intention of publishing his work?
No, he was just swept up with the process of creation.
It's just an amazing. His work is amazing.
Yeah.
It really is. I look back at the history of language and words and poetry and writing, and I really am just awestruck sometimes at the brilliance of what people have written, and reading some of the works of people like in the 1700s or 1600s or, 1800s, and it's just, or even older than that, and you just go, wow. It really is very inspiring and really motivates you to really keep writing and see what comes out of you.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've been writing for a long time. You just always knew you were going to be a writer. Is there anything that really gets you going in your inspiration? Do you ever just see a bubbling brook or something and get inspired? What is something that really makes you inspired to write?
I think something that either is or feels new, whether or not it is. I'm always really inspired. I wake up early in the morning. I'm definitely an early morning person. So I'm always inspired by dawn. It's such a powerful mm-hmm. time. And if I'm anywhere outside of a city, during, the beginning of day, that usually means a poem's going to come, because I believe dawn, I believe every day, it just feels like the newest day of creation. So it's, it's like that Cat Stevens song, Morning Has Broken Like the First Morning. And
right.
I think that's a feeling of newness. Being at the ocean, of course, every wave is new. I'm inspired by a lot of different things. Laughter, people having fun, nature, of course. I have spent an awful lot of time out in the woods and in various mountain ranges and so forth. So that inspires me. I'm also inspired by really spirited conversation, especially of a multicultural variety. One of the things that's been really an absolute joy for me, I've been a professional writer since 1976, but one of the greatest pleasures I've had in the last year was one of my dreams in this lifetime was to edit a literary journal, and it never happened just because of everything else I was doing, but I got involved with the Hummingbird Review about a year ago, and I became its editor, and one of the things, like you're talking about the study of languages and so forth, well, one of the things we're doing with Hummingbird is making it a multicultural exchange. So in every issue, we've got echoes from anywhere between 10 and 15, maybe 20 ethnic groups or peoples with long histories. And that turns me on. Just the interplay of language, the interplay of images, and to be able to have, conversations with people when that kind of stuff's going on. Like we had a we had our hummingbird review reading about 4 weeks ago in Southern California, and we had a great eclectic group of people. And we had Michael Blake, who's the author of Dances with Wolves. He was there. Don Eulert, who is the founder of American Haiku magazine. We had John Doe, who's the singer and bassist for X, which is a very popular L.A. Mm-hmm. punk rockabilly band with a poetry emphasis. And then we had several other poets, and it was just this wonderful exchange, cross-cultural, you know, just exchange, and that really turns me on when you have that kind of thing, because it can't help but be creative and powerful and moving and really make people stand up and say, wow, this is, you know, this is what writing and languaging is really about.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a wonderful experience for pretty much everybody there. So with the diversity of what's going out there these days and people really enjoying the process, at times they do want to publish. And since you just brought up about the journal, the Hummingbird Review, which is a wonderful publication, I was very lucky to get a couple of my pieces in there. Thank you very much, Bob. And publishing right now is kind of, you really got to do it yourself for the most part to even really get signed these days. Don't you think that's true?
Yeah, that's definitely true. Publishing has changed a lot in the last 10 years, and it made a very, I would call it kind of ominous shift about 12 to 15 months ago, where before, if you had a really good, if you could write well, you had a distinctive voice, you had a good story to tell, and you put it together, you could get an agent, and then the agent would represent you with the large publishers, and of course, either you get an agent or not for small and mid-sized publishers, because a writer can represent themselves with them. And you send it in with a book proposal and stuff, and then the quality of the writing would dictate whether or not the publisher bought the work. Well, now it's kind of evolved or devolved, however you want to look at it, into a matter of the very first thing that the publishing houses look for is the writer's platform. How much mm-hmm. influence and reach and media relationship and so forth does this person have? How many books can they sell by what they've got networked and what they've got going on in their careers or their world? That is the very first question that goes through a publisher's mind. You go on down the line with questions related to that, and then finally they say, how good's the writing? That to me is backwards, but that's reality. That's right. What's going on now. So writers are finding themselves, and I'm speaking about previously unpublished authors. Previously unpublished authors are finding themselves having to become PR experts before mm-hmm. they even send their books in. And I can tell you, just in the last 6 to 9 months, I've worked with quite a few clients where while they're writing their sample chapters or in the case of fiction, writing their entire novel, and while we're doing book proposals and everything else, we're simultaneously building websites, creating mm-hmm. blogs, getting them on Facebook and or Twitter, which everybody should be on, one or the other, and then getting article campaigns going and anything we can do to build their exposure so that when they send in their query letter and their proposal or whatever to the publisher, the publisher will look on that query letter and they'll look to see if the author has provided links, hot links within the letter to websites and blogs and public postings such as Scribd.com, Facebook, etc. And they'll actually sit there and link it up. They'll hit the link while they're reading the letter to make sure that not only is there something up, but that it's active.
Right.
That's what's going, and that's where publishing has gone. It's a very difficult position for a lot of writers to be in, but what I would say to that is we're all in that position. That's the reality of publishing. And then, of course, mm-hmm. the alternate to that kind of publishing, which is traditional, is to self-publish, which is a lot, which used to be a real, I mean, that used to be a no-no. That used to be taboo. You didn't self-publish unless, well, they used to call it vanity press, where you were so vain that you had to make sure your name was out there. So it was kind of a taboo subject, but now self-publishing is far more acceptable, and it's also far more profitable and for a lot of authors, and it's a much better way for writers who know how to promote themselves to mm-hmm. get their books out there if, you know, they're not in line to get the big deal.
Well, also the thing is, there's a lot of self-publishing, well, authors that actually get signed up because they've done the work themselves.
Right.
Those books. So then the big heavy hitters will come and sign them. So it's also another way, another avenue to get signed to the big publishing houses.
Right, and that goes to what that's right, and I mean, like The Celestine Prophecy by James Redfield, that's a perfect example of a self-published book that was later picked up and became big.
Right.
And the reason why he was picked up was because he self-published it, he sold it out of the back of his car, and he sold mm-hmm. several thousand copies, and he was able to show those records to the publishers, and again, they saw sales, they saw, you know, dollars, and it's all about numbers, and they saw
right.
those numbers, and then it was picked up, and then of course it became one of the better selling spiritual titles of the last 30 years.
Right. And I want to mention that this doesn't go just for writing. It also goes for music and photography and any of the arts. Actually, if you want to get your work out there, you really need that platform. You need to have that brand and get it out there, because everything that we've been saying, I actually had to do for a local band that I was doing, was have the website, get their name out on all the social sites. And that's how we got the scouts there, is because we had something on the web. And actually, you got to think of the Grateful Dead and Dave Matthews Band. They sold their own albums and made their own first album. And because they let their fans send out their music to spread the word, that's how Dave Matthews got signed. It was because of the grassroots, word of mouth, getting it out there any way they could, because it really was before social marketing. So it goes for all the platforms of any kind of art, which is kind of beautiful and bizarre at the same time. So it's a wonderful time for new artists to express themselves. I mean, if you are a musician, MySpace is still a great place to be, as well as Facebook. But Twitter is huge. I am amazed to I went to a book marketing conference in September, and Facebook, number one place to be. If you don't have a fan page, number one thing you got to do is get yourself some kind of page on Facebook and really get yourself out there. That and blogging.
Right, and ideally, tying it all together. For instance, one of the models that I've been setting my clients up with that's worked very well with their publishing aspirations is website, blog, Facebook or Twitter, and Scrib.com, which is a great public read site where it's free to load, it's free to read, and the whole publishing world goes on there to see what's new. And the whole idea is to, and this is a really important point for all writers, whether they're publishing themselves or trying to be picked up, it's really important that these platforms, the website, Scribd, blog, Facebook, YouTube, whatever the combination is, that it's completely integrated with each other and it's interactive.
Right.
That's really important, because a lot of people do it all separately, and there's no linking, there's no connection. But the thing is, if you put those elements together, that's when people, that's when you get really high numbers of subscribers on a blog. You get your Facebook readership count skyrockets and people start visiting the website. And so it's, so if we're going to, as writers, if we're going to make the, take the time and invest the money and time to put, to create these things, it's really important that they all work together. For instance, a quick example would be on Facebook. If I'm writing a blog, I will, put up my blog. I use WordPress for blog. And then I will just put the first short paragraph of my blog on a Facebook post, and I put it to both my fan page and my personal page. And then I link the blog so that it's all right there, and all the reader has to do is click. And that's the, yeah, that's the goal, to integrate it.
And I do the same. It's quite, and it's the other thing though, invite comments.
Right.
That makes it, I mean, it's amazing if, when I do a blog or a poem or something, if I don't say comments are welcome, they won't say anything.
Right.
It's kind of interesting, at least the people who have been reading my work. But if I say comments are welcome, boy, I get them more often than not. If I just say invite, I'd like to get some feedback. What do you think? What are your thoughts? And it's a great way to read a lot of people. And, you know, there's also a lot of public journal sites that you can go to if you don't want to use pad and paper. To me, to have an actual journal that I can carry with me and a pen, it's just, there's just an element of more of a connection than with the keyboard, though I've written many
right.
great things with a keyboard, but there's something about. And even Wayne Dyer hand writes all his books, which that fascinates me, but how he does that. But he hand writes all his books. So there's definitely a connection with the paper when you're doing it that way. What are some of the other things that really make you want to help? I mean, this has always been your dream to help other writers. I know that you've helped me in many ways, and I do thank you. Your support and your suggestions are wonderful. Your Word Journal website has lots of wonderful information. You have several books actually on exercises as well. Do you want to talk about some of your books? You have a couple new ones coming out, or just came out.
Yeah, I've written a couple of books for writers. One is Rites of Life, and that's using personal experiences in everything you write. And I'm in the middle of updating that right now. It was an independent book publisher's award winner a few years ago. And then the other one is The Right Time, which is 366 exercises to fulfill your writing life. And that's exactly what it is. It's a different writing exercise every day. And rather than just writing prompts, I storied out the exercises, so it's an experience, not just a prompt. And I also included every conceivable genre of writing in the exercises, so that if somebody took the book and actually did the exercise, each exercise each day, then they couldn't help but be pretty diverse when the year was up. But the beauty about a book like that is you can just go to open it up to any page and, you know, find something to try out, which is one of the ways to become a better and deeper and more versatile writer, is simply to try new things. And a book with diverse exercises is a good way to do it. And the way I came up with that book was I literally collected exercises that I drummed up during about a 10-year period of teaching writing workshops. And I had about 250 of them, and then I sat down and created the other 116 to finish the book. So those I work with writers in that regard, And I've got a novel, The Voice, which is finally coming out next summer. And then I've got a new poetry and essay collection called Backroad Melodies, and that will be out hopefully next summer as well.
So do you suggest or do you recommend, and I know you're going to say yes, but I'm going to ask a question anyway, writing classes or writing groups?
Yes, I recommend, I think everybody, no matter, you know, where they're at with their writing, if you feel uninspired or not motivated or blocked, or otherwise just needing a spark, I think a workshop or a class is a really good idea, preferably one taught by a published author. That's a good teacher, and I don't mean to say that to beat on my own drum, but it's because you get a perspective from someone who's been able to take a story or a collection of poems or whatever and take it all the way to the promised land, which is publishing, and to have a reading audience, and so they can talk about writing the book to get it published, but they can also talk about what audiences are looking for. I think going to a writer's conference, I would strongly recommend that for every writer to go to at least one or two. Writer's conferences, they come in all shapes and sizes, but the basic elements that are really important are, number one, you get to see presentations by a whole bunch of different published authors, fiction, nonfiction, memoir, how-to, et cetera, et cetera. Number two, the keynote speakers are always very inspiring, and they're usually best-selling authors. So you get to see how someone works when they have written many books and they're under the gun. Number three, the interaction with other writers, because sometimes we get so insular when we're creating and so forth that we think we're the only ones out there, and then suddenly you go to a writer's conference and there's 200 people just like us. And so that's always fun to compare notes with them and just talk about just the process. And that's very inspiring and also very energizing. But one of the biggest reasons to go to a writer's conference, I feel, is to get into, the Southern California Writers Conference, which is one of the favorite ones that I work at, or one of my favorites. It's called Reading Critique. And what that is you have a facilitator, a presenter, 12 to 15 people in a room. Everybody's bringing in 3 pages or so, different genres. They read, everybody in the room comments, and then the facilitator comments. And when you're in a supercharged atmosphere like a writer's conference to start with, I've seen some of the best writing come out of these reading critiques. It's really remarkable. So I would think writing classes are really good to go to, workshops, of course. Writers' groups are good if everybody's at pretty much the same place in their, in their process of writing or their ability or whatever, and then maybe have someone a little bit above that. But the thing about a writing group that I would say is it's extremely valuable if you keep the group intact, so you don't do too much changing in and out of people, but also if everyone understands that they're there to give constructive feedback, not pointed criticism. I mean, that's a very important point because, we want to be given feedback to become better writers. We don't want to be told, you're not doing it right and not being given a reason. But above all, I would say that every writer should go to couple of writers' conferences because they really make a difference. Plus, on top of everything I said, there are publishers, editors, and literary agents there. So you really get to see where your work stands.
Yes. And something else that is a good kind of exposure to get your stuff out there as well is, and possibly getting some feedback, is entering contests and getting your poems and your writing in journals in contests in magazines. You sometimes can get some feedback, though sometimes either these days it's more you accept it or you're not. But getting your word out there really helps. There's also a lot of public reading that is a really good way to see how the audience is going to react to your work. Would you agree?
Right. If we're talking about poetry especially, I believe that the key to, first of all, if we're published poets, money is not our primary motivation for just being a published poet. It's that we have something from deep within our souls or our minds or our observation that we love, that we've written and that we've presented it in a form that we absolutely love. And it's just one of the most beautiful form. It is the most beautiful form, in my opinion, of writing mm-hmm. that's ever been created. And we want to share it with others. So I believe there's a direct relationship by how much you read poetry live and how much people know you as a poet, but also the more we read out loud and live, the more distinct and sharper our voices become. And that's really important whether we're poets or we're novelists, because the name of the game in getting readers is your story good and do you have a voice? And when it comes to poetry, it's all about voice and the way we put words together. So reading's really important. In poetry, there are a ton of writing and poetry contests, and they're everything from submitting a few poems or a short story to actually doing chapbooks or short story collections or novellas. And the very best place I could lead your listeners to check out is poetsandwriters.org. It's the website for Poets and Writers magazine. And every month, if you get on there, every month they send out a free list of all the writing contests with deadlines that month. So you're getting, each month you get a list of anywhere between 30 and 60 contests with deadlines that month. Well, if you multiply that by 12, that's, 350 to 700 contests that they list. So that's the very best source I can think of for getting plugged into the contests that are going on. And the contests, they range from, we have a real modest one with the Hummingbird Review where it's $100 in publication, up to some of the most prestigious contests will offer $5,000 in a book contract. So it's poetsandwriters.org. That's the place to go for writing contests. But yeah, I agree with you. It's really important. That's a great way to get, not only to get your work published and noticed, but to make a name for yourself.
Right. The other thing that was mentioned at the book marketing was YouTubes and just reading, a few chapters or a few of your poems to get your name out there. YouTube actually is a great way. Plus it is a great way of practicing your performance in a sense for your poetry. So you can always, videotape yourself and put yourself on YouTube. It's another form of exposure for you, because YouTube, there's a lot out there. But if you, especially if you have a series of poems that tell a story, it would be a beautiful way of doing like a short film through your reading of your poems. There's a lot of creative ways of getting yourself out there and promoting yourself and getting a name. But definitely there's a lot of support these days. And with that, we really only have about 5 minutes left, believe it or not. So would you give us the honor of reading another one of your poems?
Sure. Let me think of what I can read here. I'll read, let's see. I'm just looking real quick. But while I'm looking, what I'd say about YouTube real quickly is like one of the poets that read at our review a month ago, Maggie DeRosa, she made her name, she's published a book, but she made her name going on YouTube and being taped reading. So wherever she goes and reads, people show up to see her read, and she doesn't know everybody. And that's just because, you know, that's just because of YouTube. So I'll read one here. It's from my book Shades of Green. It was part of a suite of four poems called My Four Corners. And what these are, four elders, four men anywhere between 15 and 25 years older than me, who kind of became my elders after my father died in the mid-90s. And I wrote a poem about each of the four, but I'll read the first one. And it's about Bill Missett, who is my first overall editor as a professional journalist when I started in the newspaper business when I was a teenager. I had two editors, Bill Missett and Steve Schofield, and this is about Bill. And he now lives in Puerto Escondido, Mexico. So this is my Four Corners, Puerto Escondido. He sits in his beachfront house, studying the soul of the wave as it rises and pounds the sand with a message delivered from an inspiration thousands of miles deep in his heart. His eyes pool forces that are best gathered in quiet, silent, hidden rooms where shadows try to rule but flee at the first sign of light. This light is always on. Every day when I awaken, I sit as we sat in the guest house and see his red hair and white beard frame a wall of records. He shows me that breathing is a vehicle onto a path that rides waves and touches the stars rather than drowning in slipstreams of broken promises and dreams.
Wow.
He also taught me how to meditate. So he's a very, very special man in my heart.
Oh, most definitely. Quite an inspiration, obviously. That was beautiful. So there is so many different ways of, I mean, if a poet is just writing like free form, structure definitely has to be a part of it. Is the industry now really more looking for one type? Because I know it's music is also the lyrics is poetry, and there's different forms. Like last time we were on, we were talking about the poetry jams and how those are really very big in the contest, and they're amazing. But also hip-hop is a form. Now, these days, is there a flavor or a genre that is becoming more popular with the audience? Have you seen?
Poetry?
Yes, of poetry or writing.
I think memoir writing is huge right now. People are writing their stories, and they're writing them better and better, and we're always going to read stories from people, so I think memoir is huge. I also think poetry is more popular than it's been in a long time. There are, and that's in large part due to the internet and being able to go viral with poetry blogs and self-published books and chapbooks and so forth. But what I've noticed is I've never seen so many readings in areas that I see now, and not only readings being offered, but also the attendance at these readings. It's higher than I've seen it. I've been going to readings off and on for 30 years, and I really haven't seen it this high. Poetry's really getting, it's never going to be a great big thing publishing-wise, but as far as just general popularity, it's pretty big right now. And I think both free verse and just writing freely is very popular, but so is formalism. I went to a reading on Sunday where everybody wrote a sestina, which is a very structured poetry form, and it was fun to listen to. And so I think it's a combination of forms, like it's always been, but poetry, public poetry events and readings are just getting bigger and better, and you know, in the literary journals, hopefully we're keeping up with it all. And I believe, you know, a good literary journal these days had better be publishing new voices as well as the established set. And a lot of them still go with mostly well-published, established voices because they're trying to sell copies, which is great, but I think it's really important that, literary journals open themselves up a lot more to new voices, because there's so many new, great, distinct voices, and, mm-hmm. you know, and as you know, we published several in our last issue of the Hummingbird Review, and it just made it a great issue because there's all these new voices, and we had, you know, best-selling authors like Luis Alberto Urrea, who's the inspiration for the Hummingbird Review. We had him coming back to us and just saying, who are these people? They're great. So you just never know who's watching, and so that's why it's so important just to keep trying to get published, and for us as literary journal editors to always be looking for new voices.
Definitely. And, you know, something that I'm very big on is mentoring. So if there's an author that you really like their works, it doesn't hurt to try and get in touch with them and say, hey, I really like your work. I just want to have a conversation with you about writing. And, you know, you guys have a common thing, a common bond, and that's the words and a love for words. So that's something I suggest. It's sometimes depending on where you go, but that's another reason why going to the conferences are just awesome. But I also wanted to ask, you say you have a blog. What is the name of your blog? So if anybody wants to find your blog, where can they find it?
Sure. It's called the Word Journeys blog, and the URL is bobyehling.wordpress.com.
Excellent. And then your website is WordJourneys.com.
WordJourneys.com, and then I'm on Facebook at both Robert Yehling and Word Journeys Resources for Writers.
And great resource there as well. And believe it or not, the time is up. Once again, it just goes by so quickly. So I thank you, Bobby Yehling, for being on once again. It's always a pleasure to have a conversation with you about poetry and writing. You're definitely one of the experts I always go to if I have questions. So I thank you very much for all your work and really kind in supporting the art of writing in so many different ways.
Well, thank you very much, Jen. It's been a real pleasure to be on once again, and I really love having these on-air conversations with you. We seem to really go a lot of places with writing, and what better way to spend an evening?
Oh, well, thank you very much, and it is something we'll have to do again.
Yep.
definitely. So with that, this is Jennifer Hellman saying, with each breath of air, we hope you gain new insights and inspirations. Until next time, many blessings and good night.